what we're talking about today is this title, No Rival, No Equal. It comes from that song, What a Beautiful Name, which we don't sing a lot of, but I really like these four words because I think it's really important for us to get this. Right? What I want us to see today is that Jesus is God, and we're going to talk about what that means for our lives next week a lot more. Because the way the book of Colossians is broken up is the first two chapters are talking about, okay, so this is Jesus. This is the theology you ought to know as the Colossians, as people of the church. And then 3 and 4 are basically the back half. And the back half of the book is all about the application as to why we ought to be living the way Paul is telling us to live. And it's as a result of the theology that we're learning. And so I thought it was a really interesting thing to go through the book of Colossians. So today we're studying Colossians 1. And then because it's only 2 weeks, next week we're studying Colossians 3, which basically ties right into chapter 1. So what we're looking at today is specifically is two aspects of Christ's deity, which means two aspects of God's, but Jesus' godliness, what makes Jesus God. And no, I think the topic is really simple. You guys know Jesus is God in your heads. And so the question is, why are we even talking about this if we already know this stuff? And honestly, the truth is this. Like, it's the foundation of every single thing that we believe, and it's something that we need to have established to set up everything else that we're going to cover next year. That's number one. Number two, and more importantly for you guys and for me as well as I write, as I wrote this and as I was studying the text, is I know we know that Jesus is God. But I really want to get at how that should be affecting our lives. Because if it's just facts, right? You know, a lot of us know a lot of things. If it's just facts, then it's just useless information. It means nothing. And the question we have to ask ourselves tonight is, so what if Jesus is God? And if you're already in the book of Colossians, we're looking at Colossians 1, 15 to 17. I'm going to read it for us. This is the word of God. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So the book of Colossians, right? It's written by Paul, you guys know that already, to the early church of Colossae. And Colossae, if you don't know about it, was an extremely diverse city with a lot of religions and a lot of people. And most importantly, it was really good because it was a really good trade route for a lot of cities to go through, for a lot of people to come through and pass through. And it was in the middle of that trade route of the world, of the known world that they had back then. And so, of course, you know, it made Colossae a thriving city because people wanted to be there, because it's kind of like L.A., like where you have, like downtown L.A., where you have all the things going in and out of it. People want to be there because it's where all the stuff is happening. But, you know, I think with lots of large cities, as you know, what happens is it comes with a large mix of different religions, and then you mix in some Jewish influence. And so Epaphras, who Paul mentions in chapter 1, verse 7, he first hears of the gospel of Jesus and begins to tell everyone living in Colossae and the church of Colossians was born. And eventually what happens because of the background of the city is you have these strange teachings that come up. And the teachers were basically telling the church of the Colossians that people... where they were telling people that Jesus was no better than any angel, that he's no better than any man. Jesus is just a man, and maybe even lesser than a man. It was leading people in the wrong direction, and the gospel that was preached by Paul was getting mixed. It was getting distorted and twisted. And so Paul, who is in prison at the time, is called to give a defense for Christ and to put things back in order. And so what we're going to see is that Paul makes a claim that screams that Jesus has no rival and no equal. He is over all things and nothing comes close to comparing to him. And we already read the first three verses. And this is a big deal for us as Christians living even in this century, because even at your age, Christ, if he isn't the only thing, the only God in your life, you're going to get lost. Why? Because if you are constantly shifting gods around and serving one God here and one God there, what you're going to get is one of them eventually has to win out. They're all competing for your affections, and eventually one of them is going to win, and you have to serve that one. Whatever God you serve will tell you how you value things, how you order your life. Everything's going to be built around it. That's the God you serve. And so if you look at your own hearts and you look at your own lives, what you build your life around is the God you serve. Jesus or God and whatever God you are serving cannot coexist, because God calls for one thing and the gods in your lives call for another thing. It's very different values as well. And I really hope it's Jesus that you end up living for, that you consider, and that he's the only one that ends up winning out for you. And the warning for you is this. If you don't figure it out now, and this is why we're talking about it now, is because if you don't figure it out, you will continue to be tossed back and forth by every wind of doctrine and deceived by what the world says it has to offer. Ephesians 4, 13 to 14. Daniel team, that was for you, by the way. But if Jesus is first, and if Jesus is God, you'll see that not only will you no longer need to depend on the world to give you an identity, but you'll find lasting peace isn't found anywhere else, and it gives you an identity. Christ is your identity. You don't need anything else telling you what you are, what you need to be, because Christ does that for you. And so the first thing we're going to look at is Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the first aspect of his deity. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. The image of the invisible God. Think about that for a moment. This is a pretty big claim coming from Paul. Thinking about the background. You know, people are thinking that, oh, like, Jesus is not better than a man. Jesus is a man, if anything, right? But Paul is saying that he's the image of the invisible God. Meaning that the God who is invisible, I think we can all agree that you don't literally see God. He was made visible for all to see when Jesus was on earth, born out of a virgin woman as a baby, lived 33 years, was crucified, and resurrected and ascended to heaven. That's how heavy this claim is. He's talking about Jesus as God. Not a man, not an angel, but above both of those things, and he is supposed to be God. Because not only does image mean how it looks or what he looks like, but it also means the things we know about God were manifested in Jesus. He could communicate. He could build relationships. He knew the difference between right and wrong. He cared for those that were oppressed, the poor, the ones that were weary. He felt emotions. And all the things that God is, Jesus was when he was on earth, and he is in heaven right now. He is the radiance of God's glory and the exact imprint of his nature. Hebrews 1:3, if you want to cross-reference. Meaning that everything that God was and is, Jesus was and is. In fact, Jesus himself actually claims it. He says this, before Abraham was, I am. Not I was, not I is, I am. I am, meaning that it's present tense. I am. John 8:58. And I don't want you to miss this. I really want, if you're taking notes, I want you to write this down. And if you're not, I hope the only thing you get, if you don't hear anything else, is this part. This means that Jesus is absolutely God, number one. There are no questions asked. Yes, he existed in the form of man, but he did it to show us how we ought to live our lives. And what that means for our lives is this. If we want to know what God is like, if we want to know what he desires, to know what he wills for us, study Jesus. Read the interactions he has with people, how he responds to them. He responds with compassion, by the way. If you want to be more like God, if you want to be more like Jesus, study Jesus. And the more you fill your heart and your mind with the study of Jesus, the more you will start to sound like him and act like him. I think you guys all have best friends. I had a best friend growing up in high school that was actually in this room with me every single week. His name was Zach Chen. I think you guys know him. Some of you guys know him. Like, some of you guys might be too young to really know what our relationship was like. But I bring him up because this is kind of the same principle here. It's kind of the same principle. If you want to get to know him better, you got to spend time with him, right? And so for me and Zach, we grew up, man, we did a lot of shenanigans together. Like, when we grew up, we basically, like, slept over each other's houses every single week, every Saturday. We went to the Blockbuster, which is now dead because Redbox basically killed it, right? We used to go there, and then we would, like, rent video games from my GameCube, and we would play, like, the most ridiculous games, like Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, and, like, Mario Kart, and we'd play these silly games. But you know what it did was it actually made us closer. We spent so much time together every single week, and it wasn't always at my house. Sometimes it was at his house, and he had a PS2, and, you know, that was my opportunity to play games I wasn't allowed to play at my house. And so we'd play for hours. Like, we would spend the whole day glued to the PS2, the computer. But the thing about it is that we were playing together. So it wasn't like we were playing on separate monitors or separate game consoles away from each other. We were literally sitting next to each other, like, yelling at each other, like, do that! Like, what are you doing? We're dying! Like, we were literally doing that. And all of that to say is that when I got older and he got older, and we had things to talk about, we didn't have to say anything. We just had to look at each other, and you knew exactly what he was thinking. Like, I knew exactly what he was going to say, and he knew exactly what I was thinking when we talked about certain things. We knew where each other stood. We didn't have to talk about it to know. That's how close we were. And so if you're sitting in here today and you don't feel like you're growing, this is where I would start. How are your daily devotions in the Word? How much time are you putting in with God every day? Because if you aren't daily putting in the time to know him, you're not going to grow more to become like him or to know him better. Because if God's Word literally means God's Word, it means that God is speaking to you through it. You're not going to know what he wants or desires if you don't spend time with him. And I'm not talking about your nonchalant kind of, oh, I got to read my Bible for 15 minutes today. Oh, my devotions are started here, like, nighttime, and, like, I'm going to go to sleep. So I'm going to spend my last 15 minutes of my waking day with God. And I close my Bible, and I'm going to pray for 5 minutes, and then I'll sleep. 20 minutes total. And I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt that you pray 5 minutes, because I don't think all of us do. 5 minutes is a lot of time, by the way. So if you're not digging deep into the Word, and your prayers aren't genuinely asking, God, what do you want to show me today, and what is it that you want me to be doing for you? Then let's just be real. How do you get to know him? Because if you spend with your best friend, if you spend time with your best friend 15 minutes a day, I guarantee you it takes you a long time to get to know that person. 15 minutes a day. So I'm not talking about, like, oh, you're going to start 15 minutes. I'm talking about you talk 15 minutes, you're like, okay, I'm done talking to you. I'm not going to talk to you anymore for the rest of the day. I'm done. Right? We're not talking about that. We're talking about the fact that you ought to be spending almost, like, a long time with God. Like, not just 15 minutes. Not just because this is what you have to do. So how is getting to know God any different? Second thing we see in our text, he is the firstborn of all creation. This does not mean that he was born first, because that would be inconsistent with John 3:16, which says that Jesus is the only begotten Son. How can you be a first if you were an only? Not only that, but that suggests that Jesus was created, which is impossible, because then Paul would be agreeing with what the people were saying. Like, oh, he might as well have been human or an angel, because they were created. If Jesus was created, he would be just like an angel. Or a human. He wouldn't be God. No. What firstborn means is rank. So almost like if you're playing your video game, I don't even know what you guys play anymore, but you are first. You are above everybody else. You are number one. That's what that means. Top rank. And you know what? This is significant, because in Jewish culture, those who were called the firstborn were the sons that were given the father's inheritance. It also meant that they were in charge of it. So they were managing whatever properties that they had. It wasn't always a firstborn child that was given the inheritance also. That's something to also note. Think about Jacob and Esau, where Jacob essentially stole both the birthright and the blessings. So you can actually steal it, right? It's not like once he's coming out of the womb, it's set in a stone, it can change. Or even think about Israel. I don't think Israel was the only nation that existed on the face of the earth. And God calls Israel the firstborn in Exodus 4:22. But there's no way that Israel was the first and only nation on the face of the earth, right? There isn't. It's impossible. Because he talks about all the other different people in the book of, like, all the Old Testament books. If you read those, there's other people on the face of the earth. It's not just the Israelites. Jesus is above creation. That's what he's arguing here. He's above creation. He's in charge of creation. He will inherit the creation for himself as the firstborn. He's the creator of creation, if that makes sense. And that's the second thing we're going to see. Jesus is the creator and sustainer of all things. Point number two. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or authorities or rulers. I read that already. All things were created through him and for him. Paul here argues that Christ is greater than everything because he created them. He created everything, whether they are visible or invisible, everything you see, everything you can feel, taste, touch, sense, see, hear, I don't know, everything. These are the things that Jesus has made. And not only that, he created thrones, dominions, rulers, or authorities. And what that means is not the kingdoms, but that what that refers to are the angels, their ranks of angels, whether they're good or evil. And he reigns over them. He's in control of even the evil angels. Not saying that he created them evil, but they fell and they became evil. He's in charge of the invisible, even the things that we can't or don't know about. And if he is greater and in control of all those things that don't want to be his, how much more is he in control of your life when you are his? This is the hope that we have that comes in the back half of the verse, that all things have been created through him and for him. So everything that has been created has purpose because it is for him. I can't imagine a God that creates something like you and says it's for him and decides, you know what, I'm going to make you with all these fancy, like, intricate wirings and you're going to be above every single creation I've made. You're the crown jewel of my creation. And then, you know what? I'm going to let you guys do your own thing. I'm out. Like, I created. I'm done. Finished. I'm tired. I don't want to work with you no more. You guys fell anyways. I don't want you guys. Done. Right? It's inconsistent with who he is. God doesn't do that. God, if he creates, he will be proud of it. And you know what? I think it's like us. We have that in us too. Whether you do well in music, whether it's academics, sports, whatever it is, when you do well at it, you are proud of it. And if you go to the next slide, I have this painting. And if you and you know what? I don't know if you guys know what this is, but this painting for me is called The Water Lily Pond by Claude Monet. And in fourth grade, I had this teacher. I don't know why, but he had us do a lot of art projects, and I sucked at art. He made us do a lot of things, and this is one of the projects I had to do. Like, I wasn't asked to do it. He gave this one to me, and I had to paint that. And I was like, Mr. Kim, I suck at drawing and painting, and you're gonna ask me to paint that thing? Like, you wish. Like, I was like, aha, you're funny. I can't do it. And so, you know, being the fourth grade kid that I was, I took it home. I'm like, Mom, we need to do this. And guess what happened? My mom was like, okay, son, I got you. And so she went ahead and did it for me. Okay? She did it for me. I love my mom, okay? I'm telling you right now, shout out to my mom. I love my mom. It was really good. This is not actually what I painted. This is what it's supposed to look like. FYI. Right? Okay. FYI. I didn't paint this one. This is what it's supposed to look like. But I can tell you it was really close. And, you know, my mom did 90% of the work. I did 10% of the work. But you know, at the end of the day, I took it to school and I was like, man, I am so proud of my work. I did 10%. I don't even know what I did. I might have, like, sketched the bridge, and that's all I did. And then she filled it in with all the paint and everything, because I clearly couldn't paint within the lines. So, you know, she did it for me, and I brought it out, like, man, look at my great artwork. I got 100%, by the way. I brought it out, like, man, look at my artwork. You know, I took it as my own, and I was... Right? I was so proud of it. But unlike my great artwork, God sustains everything he creates, because as you know, I told you, that's not mine. What happened to mine was a year later, it died. So it was on a really bad canvas, so it ended up like basically disintegrating. So that's why I didn't give you a picture of that one, or else I would have, right? And he keeps it going. The difference is God sustains everything he creates. I could not sustain even this artwork for a year. That art piece lasted a year in my living room, and then it faded out, and the canvas basically wore out. But verse 17 says that he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So he is God, number one, we talked about this. He is Lord over all things. He came before them. He came before the existence of the universe and all that is in it. He was there in the beginning when God said, let us make or let there be. This is God. He created all these things. And if that isn't clear enough for you again, Daniel Ting, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through him. And without him, he was not anything made that was made. Meaning that anything that could have been made, if he didn't make it, it didn't exist. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And the Word became flesh, verse 14, and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John 1:15, verse 14. Verse 14. Oh, everything he creates, he also holds together. He sustains, he directs, meaning that it isn't just stagnant. It's in constant motion. Think about everything he creates, and including you. If he didn't create you, you wouldn't exist. If he didn't create the floor you're sitting on, it wouldn't exist. It isn't stagnant or motionless. You aren't stagnant or motionless. Everything is constantly in change around us, and Jesus is the one who is keeping everything in order. Every molecule that you know or will learn about, everything you see and learn about in nature is put in place by this awesome God and sustained by Christ. Think about the legs that you have right now that are probably dying from sitting in your crisscross and whatever. Like, it's because the blood is flowing in you. It's not because, you know, once you sit down, your body decides to stop pumping blood. It doesn't work like that. And so everything is working in you, whether you like it or not. Every breath you take, it's not like you're telling yourself, hey, self, it's time to breathe. You need to breathe. It's not telling, like, you're telling your heart, hey, heart, I need you to beat or else I'll die. Like, you're not doing that. Right? And you can tell yourself, you have to tell yourself to stop breathing, to stop breathing. Right? It is involuntary muscles. You can't tell your heart to stop beating right now and all of a sudden it stops beating. It doesn't work like that. The reason why the sun isn't too close where you'd all burn to death, or too far where we'd all freeze to death. You ever wonder how it is that we just so happen to be perfectly placed so that everything on this planet runs as it should?
Well, if it didn't, we wouldn't be alive. So.
Exactly. You are right. That is true. If you didn't, we would be dead.
So we wouldn't be here wondering.
How for some odd reason the sun rises in the east every morning and sets in the west at night. And as soon as the sun is gone, another light comes, and it's called the moon and the stars. How do we get this consistent pattern every day to the point where we basically assume it's going to happen? Right? It's not like you wake up every day and you're like, oh, thank you God, the sun is in the west and the earth is moving a centimeter closer to the sun, or it isn't moving a centimeter closer to the sun where we could all potentially burn to death. You don't pray those things. You don't wake up and that's your first thought. Like, oh, I'm alive still. That means everything is still in place. That means everything's still working. You don't think like that. The first thing you probably think about when you wake up is, I need to brush my teeth and get ready for what I'm going to do. Right? Whether that's school, whether that's summer school, whether that's whatever you have. I don't know what you have. SAT class? I don't know. Right? You have these things. You don't pray about these things. You don't even think about them. Half the time. This is the Jesus who has no rival and no equal. He's the Lord over all things. He creates all things and sustains all things with purpose. That means your life as well. Your life, your circumstances, he controls all of that. And he does it all for a purpose because all things were created in him, through him, and for him. And so if you are a struggling Christian sitting in here today, it is no mistake that God brought you here. He has purpose for it, and if you aren't sure what that is, He has purpose. That purpose is this, that He may draw you to Himself, that you may taste and see that the Lord is good. Psalm 34:8. You see, our God is not one that decides to do things and then just creates things and then puts it there just because. He doesn't do that. He doesn't let it run its course. He's there orchestrating it from day one, and He's orchestrating it moment to moment, even right now. He places everything in its place for a purpose. Can a man do that? Can an angel do that? Because you know what? If you ask me, as a man, I can't even control the next thing that's about to happen. Barely. Like, if I can predict it, but it doesn't mean I can control it. Like, I can say, oh, like, what's going to happen after this? We're going to pray, and we're going to go to small groups, right? But what happens in small groups, what happens outside of small groups, I can't control what happens. I can't control what you guys are going to say. But God knows exactly what's going to happen. He knows exactly what you're going to say. No man or angel can do that. Only someone with God's divine authority and power can do that. And that is Jesus. That is why it is Jesus who has no rival and no equal, because no man or angel can say that they control and dictate every circumstance, whether they are living or not, human or not. They can't. And I think the only thing we need to think about is, if Christ is your God, is He getting your attention as the only God in your life? That's the one thing I want you guys to get away from all of this. All of this, you take away, that you go into small groups with, I hope this is the question you're asking yourself, is He the only one that's getting your attention as God? Or are there other things that you serve in place of Him? And how you know this, if you know how you know that there are other things competing for first place in your heart to dethrone God and become the lowercase God of your life, look at how you live your life and how you plan your life around things. What is it planned around? Is it planned around your sports? Is it planned around food? Is it planned around your friends? Is it planned around God? Because you know what? I know we know a lot of things. I couldn't say this at retreat, you know, when I was in Arizona, when I was preaching with Kevin. We preached on this topic, by the way. Like, I couldn't say, oh yeah, you guys know your Bible. But here, I can say that because I know you guys have been trained, and this is one of the things that we value a lot, is your Bible. You know a lot about Jesus is God. But I could care less, really. I don't care how much you know. You know a lot, and that's a given. But do you live like you know a lot? And what I mean is that the more you know Him, the more you taste of His goodness, the more your life would seek to live for Him and less for other things. Because those things become lesser to you. Because God is so important that, you know what, everything else that comes after it, those are just nice things, but those aren't the things that you build your life around. Because you realize, you know what, I live for God, and living for God is so much better than living for these other things. And you know what, I'd like to think that Jesus for us kind of becomes school, in a sense. And I know what that's like because I grew up here. And you know, like, I'm here, and you know, I come here on Fridays, I come here on Sundays, and I do all the holy things, I read my Bible, I do all these nice things for other people, I pray every day before I sleep, pray for every meal I eat. But just knowing a lot about God, I was there at your age. You know, when you guys are sitting in here, I used to be sitting here with you. And let me just say, I knew a lot about Him. And what I did with that pushed a lot of people away from me, whether they were non-Christians or even Christians, except for the ones at church, because they valued that stuff like I did, right? I was more interested in showing them my Bible knowledge than showing them my Jesus. And I can't even say that attitude is completely gone, because I still feel it. I still have it in me sometimes when I look at other people preach, when I look at other people talk. I still feel it. And I have to tell myself, hey, you've been blessed to know a lot. And that's God's grace to you. He's revealed Himself to you in that way. And self, if you don't control this, it's going to destroy you. And I think it took a lot of humbling and breaking for Christ. And by Christ for me to stop living that way. Because, you know, when you start pushing Christians away, that really tells you you're doing something wrong. And that's what I was doing in high school. In high school, me and my friend Joe Tang, we used to carry our Bibles out. And we, you know, everyone's like, oh, like, look at those Bible thumpers walking around. Like, they have their Bibles. And then we had the paperback ones. And so the paperback Bibles, by the time we got to senior year, basically were taped with masking tape and duct tape and whatever you can call it. And it was a gray cover. You didn't even know what the book was because it was so beat up from being carried around day in and day out. But, you know, we prided ourselves on bringing that around and, like, telling people, hey, you know what? Live for Jesus. This is why I'm going to bash you with everything, not listen to what you're saying. Live for Jesus because it's the best thing in your life. And I wasn't living that way. For the, a lot of people that saw me, they're like, man, your life sucks because you're living for a Jesus that seems to be so, like, there's no love. It's all just law, 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 law. And so for you, I hope that you don't make that same mistake. I want you to draw people to you. Don't push people away from you. I didn't learn that until college, really. And when college people decided to love me enough to kind of take me aside and tell me that my Bible knowledge is great, but it's frustrating other people. It's not helping the situation. Because I think one of the things that I was really good at was I memorized a lot of Bible. And you know, when people were struggling, I'd just be like, hey, know this verse. Here you go. Go, be free. Be merry. Know that God is with you. Bye. Right? I would say those kind of things and people are like, you're not helping them. You're not helping them and you're not looking at them with compassion. You're looking at them as if you're a Pharisee. That, you know, you clean the outside of your cup and the inside is dark and messed up, but you don't show them that side because you know what? You can't show them that because we live for God. You can't be a hypocrite. Right? Those are things I taught myself. And I hope that that's not you. I hope that you really learn to love God, but that it pours out as you go out into the world around you. That the love that you have for Christ, it becomes real, that people can feel it. That they know that, you know what, it's not just knowledge that he knows, but it's more than that. Is Jesus God to you? And if he is, are you living like it? And I hope that, you know, your pursuit of God, it helps you taste and see his goodness, and that it humbles you as a result of that. To live like Christ because you see how good it is to live for Christ. But more importantly, you know, the more you grow in the knowledge of him, I hope the more you're going to see that these things that you're chasing that are on the side that may take the space, that you're chasing this earthly life, they don't compare to him. Because he has no rival and he has no equal.